This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. More than 50 former judges from around Wisconsin have filed a petition with the state Supreme Court for new rules on when campaign contributions should disqualify a judge from presiding over a case. In 2010, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that justices do not have to disqualify themselves from cases because of campaign contributions. With increased donations in the state's judicial elections, some are questioning whether judges can remain impartial in cases involving a campaign supporter. Joining us to talk about the petition are Dale Pacell and John Perlich, retired judges from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, and Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhart Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. And John, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, what inspired this group of judges to, you know, come together to file this petition?
Well, I don't know about all the other judges. In my case, it was frustration. I think it's fair to say that our Supreme Court right now does not exactly have the greatest reputation of Supreme Courts throughout the United States. And I think the credibility of the judicial system has suffered. We've had some issues with elections and activities during those elections. And it's not just judges being impartial, it's the appearance of impartiality. We have to make sure that the litigants before us trust us, and they have to feel comfortable with us. And sometimes, at least in my opinion, I don't think that's coming across.
And, you know, Dale, can you talk a little bit about, you know, what prompted you to kind of sign on to this position as well?
Well, many of the same reasons that John has cited. I think that there's been a lot of public criticism of the Wisconsin court system. And there was a study in 2014 of recusal rules that was prompted by a decision of our United States Supreme Court in Caperton versus Massey that ranked the states from 1 to 50. And they had a scoring system. It was an empirical study. And in terms of recusal rules, Wisconsin was third from the bottom. There have been other complaints that have been lodged, public criticism of the recusal rules. And the present state of our recusal rules is not reflective of the case law that has come down from our United States Supreme Court in setting an objective standard that went not only to actual bias, but to the appearance of bias. And as Judge Perlich said, it's the appearance of bias that strikes at the heart of the judicial function. Judicial rulings depend largely on the respect of the population for their authority. And if that is lacking, then we have a real problem. And so a couple of years ago, at the Judicial Conference, we have a Reserve Judge Association, an association of retired judges. One of the judges got up and spoke and said, this is an issue that we as a body ought to address. And so we formed committees and we studied it and we came up with the petition that we have now filed with the Wisconsin Supreme Court to change the recusal rules in a variety of ways that we think will enhance the public's view of our integrity as a court system.
Rick, I think this is interesting, this idea of, you know, managing the appearance of bias, not just managing bias itself, but, you know, the appearance that bias might be kind of playing a part. You know, how is that different than, you know, managing bias versus managing the appearance of bias and maybe more challenging?
Well, they're both challenging. Most of us believe that we are less biased than we actually are. Human beings just aren't really wired for impartiality, right? And so, and in fact, education and experience really doesn't help. We tend to think that We are more confident with regard to our own impartiality if we have more education and more experience, but that very overconfidence lends itself to increased self-deception. And so people who are at high levels in their profession have to take even greater care to maintain impartiality, limit sources of bias, and that's often not the case. And then the second is reputation. And just about every profession in the United States, actually every profession I know of, has a code of ethics which really tries to protect that profession's reputation. And the main way you do that is by eliminating conflicts of interest. And so that's what this is attempting to do, is reduce those conflict of interest just to assure the public, look, bias isn't really influencing judicial decisions.
I want to take a step back and kind of talk about, you know, the recusal process and, you know, why it's important. So, John, can you just talk a little bit about, you know, in what instances might a judge kind of disqualify him or herself?
Obviously, the most easiest to understand is the more blatant one. You know, if somebody is suing my wife, I can't be the judge on that case, okay? If my mother is the plaintiff, I can't be the judge on that case. So those are the easy ones. The harder ones are if there are some political issues involved in the case, for instance, where because of your political affiliations, and in some states, judges are politically affiliated. Wisconsin is luckily one of those that isn't. It's a closer call. And so the first thing a judge has to do is look at it and say, do I think I can fairly hear this case? And if the answer is yes, I think I can, then the second question is, are the parties going to think that I can fairly decide this case? And that's what this petition is designed to look at. What is the perception of the people who are appearing in front of us? Do they think we are capable of being fair and impartial?
Dale, it sounds like it places a lot of responsibility with the judge.
It does. I think that to the point Rick made, we all have implicit biases that often we're unaware of. So when a motion to recuse is made where somebody comes in and says, I want a different judge, I think it calls upon us to be fairly introspective. But even doing that, we may feel subjectively that we can be fair and impartial, but the real question is whether other people looking at us can come to the conclusion that this judge under these circumstances would be fair and impartial. And when you have huge amounts of money being spent in judicial campaigns, the question comes up, is justice for sale? And do the litigants appearing in front of a case feel comfortable arguing in front of a judge where the opposing party or the opposing lawyer has made huge contributions to the judge's campaign coffers? And so the petition we have here is designed to alleviate some of that burden by giving bright line rules to the judge, telling a judge if it's more than this amount of money, then you have to get off the case, by setting up a process for these hearings to be had, where if you decide that you can stay on the case as the judge, that the parties have an opportunity to seek review from another court, a superior court, to say, no, we think that a reasonable person might view you as being biased or the appearance of bias exists. By having a neutral party decide that, I think, help alleviate some of the things that the judge himself or herself would have to do. We put the onus on the parties to tell us if they've contributed more. They would have to tell us that in doing it. And so, yes, it's a very difficult, decision to make. But this process, I think, would help alleviate a lot of the concerns that the public might have about the fairness and impartiality of the judicial system. And so this is something that's an improvement, I think, if it's passed or enacted over what we have presently, where right now in Wisconsin, the law is no matter how much money is contributed, that alone is not a basis for recusal. The law is the only person who can decide whether or not there's bias or in the appearance of bias is the judge who's allegedly biased, which if you think about it, doesn't make a great deal of sense. And so we're hopeful that given a fair hearing on the merits by the Supreme Court, that we might have some improvement in our recusal rules.
Dale, you mentioned that this petition has, you know, kind of proposed or suggested specific dollar amounts for
yes.
when a judge should, you know, remove themselves from a case. Why is that important to have a specific limit?
I think it helps the judge and the litigants and everybody understand exactly. It's a bright line. It's a clear rule. There's no vagueness about it. If it's over that amount, you need to get off of the case. There is an exception. The non-contributing party can say, no, that's fine. The judge can stay on the case. So if somebody has contributed to one judge's campaign over the limit for that type of court, the opposing party, if they feel, no, this judge can be fair and we'd like to have this judge hear the case, they can say, no, that's fine. We're willing to waive that. So there's an ability to keep the same judge on the case. But it's a bright line rule. It's designed so that there's clarity, no misunderstanding, no vagueness about how the rule ought to be applied.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about ethics and campaign donations and why a group of former judges are calling for stricter rules in the state's judicial system. We're here with Dale Passell and John Perlich, retired judges from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, and Rick Kite, director of Viterbo's Institute for Ethics and Leadership. And John, do you have an example of a time where you have disqualified yourself from hearing a case?
Oh, yeah, it happens all the time. You know, you've got friends, you've got neighbors in a small community like this. You know a lot of people. And so it's very common where you say, nah, I know these people, or maybe I know something about the case. You know, so judges are constantly recusing themselves. You have to remember that it's a very, very simple matter to get another judge assigned. And it's not like, oh, geez, this is a terrible thing that the judicial system has to go through because now the judge has recused him or herself. It's paperwork. You know, a document is signed and another judge is assigned. And everybody is entitled to a fair and impartial judge. They're not necessarily entitled to the one that they contributed all that money to. And you know, this does rise, as Dale was talking about in the Massey case, the Supreme Court of the United States says it rises to the constitutional level. It's an issue of due process. And it's not just, you know, some little rule that we're playing around with here. There's some constitutional issues that are very, very heavy involved with this.
Dale, do you have a specific example of a time where you've recused yourself?
Sure. I've had children of my neighbors in court. I've had neighbors in court. And I think for all of us, as John said, it's a fairly routine thing. We live in a relatively small community. All of the judges in our county are people who I think are involved in the community in one fashion or another, and it seems inevitably that we have people come before us where we simply know that it's not appropriate for us to sit on that case because of our relationship with the individual or with that individual's family. And so, yeah, if a young man comes before me and he was on my son's team in high school, I don't feel comfortable sitting on that case, and I think it's better that for everybody that I not do that. So I've recused myself, and it's fairly routine. So when people come before us, if there's a question, my inclination has been to err on the side of caution to give those people a different judge so that people don't question that later on.
And Rick, you know, I think people often talk about campaign donations for legislative races or other, you know, offices, but, you know, I wonder how, you know, how often we're seeing people really donating a lot of money to judicial races and if that's kind of changed over the years.
It's changed. It's increased quite a bit. And one of the reasons is because people and organizations think that is one of the that there's a lot of influence available there by spending money, right? It's the same reason, like, for many years we found pharmaceutical companies spending a lot of money on doctors, right, giving vacations and so forth. It's they weren't doing this out of goodwill. They were doing it because they thought they could influence decisions. And so we find the same thing. When we think about legislation, it is really remarkable how much the reputation of members of Congress has dropped over the past 15 years. As we've seen increased influence of money, right? Gallup organization does surveys every year on the reputation of different professions. Now, they have not surveyed judges, but they surveyed a lot of other professions. Year after year, nurses are at the top, the best reputation for honesty and integrity. And so they get rated very highly year after year. Members of Congress 30 years ago used to do rate okay, but just in the last 15 years, they are now the lowest ranked of any profession in the nation. Over half of Americans rate members of Congress low or very low. And I think that's a direct result of the influence of campaign spending. There's a perception that legislation is for sale. And we don't want that to happen with the judiciary. And I think it's avoidable. And this is one way. This petition is seeking to do that. Let's protect the integrity of the judiciary.
And John, you know, from your perspective, you know, how have regulations around campaign contributions in the judicial system changed?
Well, drastically. Okay, and when I first ran back in what, 85, I think, the amount of money that was spent on that campaign was relatively minimal. Today, you've got vast amounts of money, not just in legislative races like Rick was talking about, but also in judicial races. You look at the money that's spent in the Supreme Court and who can spend it or who can't spend it. Basically, with the change in the regulations, it's wide open. Anybody can spend as much money as they want on a race, and without divulging who the person is that's spending it. We don't know where the source of those funds are. So I think that's one of the reasons why this petition is particularly appropriate now is because of the change in those regulations on campaign spending. It's a different ballgame than it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you last ran a campaign, I mean, what was that process like you know, how much money was needed? And do you think that that has changed and kind of where judicial candidates are kind of looking for donations or receiving donations?
I think the first campaign I ran, I think we spent $10,000, which is nothing anymore. I haven't run one now in a long time, and I'm glad I don't have to, because trying to raise that money is hard. But the Supreme Court races for the state of Wisconsin, Jesus, they're talking millions, I think.
Yeah, Dale. I mean, remembering back to, you know, the last campaign you ran, I mean, kind of what were the, I guess, was there a lot of pressure to seek out these big donations, and kind of where were they coming from?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, as John was saying, we were talking thousands of dollars. Secondly, when John and I, both of us, when we ran campaigns, judges were barred from actually soliciting the funds themselves. In addition to that, there were campaign contribution limits to the judge's direct campaign that were a 20th of what is allowed today. Third, and this wasn't true of, I'm sure, John or I, there were, today we have a lot of independent organizations who are weighing in on not only legislative campaigns and campaigns for executive offices, but and judicial campaigns. And up until a couple of years ago, there were rules that were in place that barred coordination between the candidate and these supposedly independent expenditures. So what's changed is we have a lot more interest in who's getting elected, because the perception is, as Mr. Kite said, that you can get some influence there. Secondly, the campaign contribution limits were increased in 2015 by about 20 times what they were just 5 years earlier. Third, we have case law now and Supreme Court rules in Wisconsin that says that coordination is permissible. And so even if you look at the United States Supreme Court decision in Caperton versus Massey that says there's an objective standard to potential due process violations for recusal, even then, they cited the fact that, and the dissent cited the fact that the judge in that case, Judge Benjamin, who had a $3 million contribution from one of the parties to the lawsuit, that he had no control over some of those expenditures because they were made to an independent political organization. Today in Wisconsin, it's permissible for the candidate to coordinate with the independent agency on issue advocacy. And so we have the potential for a candidate for a judicial office to be getting literally $1 million or more and still be sitting in the case where that party, the contributing party, is one of the litigants. And needless to say, that looks pretty bad, I think, to most people who are looking at our court system. And this petition, we hope, will help alleviate some of that. Because even if we have people who are elected who truly can be neutral on that and rule on the law, the appearance of impropriety, or the appearance of bias, I should say, is so strong that it raises questions in the general population as to the integrity of our system.
That's Dale Pacelle, a retired judge from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, here with us today to talk about ethics and campaign contributions in the judicial system. Also joining us is John Perlich, another retired judge from La Crosse County, and Rick Kite, director of Viterbo's Institute for Ethics and Leadership. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Rick, you know, I wonder if we have been seeing judicial races become maybe more partisan or appear to be more partisan in recent years, and if that has played a role in this, you know, conversation about campaign contributions.
They are certainly more partisan, and one of the reasons is the amount of money that has to be raised. I mean, if you are, you can be a very credentialed and experienced candidate for a position, but right now you have to align yourself with organizations that can fund your campaign. How do you do that? You do it with the organizations that support the political parties, and they have agendas. So all the way from recruiting candidates to funding them and supporting them, this has become part of our partisan process. And so one of the things we have to watch out for is how do we tease that apart? We know that we're in a kind of a hyper-partisan situation when it comes to many forms of government. But can we at least reduce that when it comes to judges? I think that's the question here. I'm not sure if we're ever going to go back to, you know, at least in the foreseeable future, right? We're not going to go back, but let's see if we can reduce it and restore confidence.
We've been talking about a petition signed by more than 50 former judges regarding campaign contributions and the recusal process for judges. And, you know, John, I wonder if you have heard of any opposition to this petition and to this idea of setting these, you know, these bright lines as we've been talking about them.
Well, there are people that will, I'm sure, ultimately oppose this petition. There's at least one letter from a lobbyist, I think, for the Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce or Manufacturers that was in the Milwaukee Journal when the petition was first filed. The only argument that I've heard so far is that somehow this will, if it's passed, will cause people to be reluctant to contribute at all, and that it may keep people out of the political process. And my argument to that is that if we keep people out of the political process who are trying to buy a judge, that ain't a bad thing, okay? I can sleep nights with worrying about that argument. So I'm sure there will be opposition. I don't know where it's going to come from. Maybe Rick has got a better idea about that one. But there will be opposition.
Dale, your thoughts on potential opposition?
What I've read and heard is that the people who are opposed to this are making an argument that largely runs along the lines that this will have a chilling effect on free speech. In Citizens United, our Supreme Court decided that speech included contributions of money and that corporations, for purposes of free speech, were people. That's settled law. That's the law. However, in terms of the argument that's being made, that this would somehow limit contributions and chill free speech, I think that the response is that we're not talking about limiting free speech. Citizens United actually has language in it that talks about that. It says that the holding, Caperton's holding, was limited to the rule that the judge must be recused, not that the litigant's political speech could be banned. And that's a quote from that decision. And see, what we have is a situation where you can still contribute to any candidate that you want, but you're not entitled to have that individual hear your case. And the very vehemence with which this argument is being made by some individuals, I think speaks to the perception that a judge will be influenced by the contribution. There's a reason that they don't want this rule. That the reason is, in my opinion, that they want to be able to make these contributions because they perceive that they've purchased some influence from that judge. And so I think that's the response to that. The other thing I would point out is that in the case that sets the definition here, Caperton, we had a dissent from Justice Roberts and joined by a couple others, including Justice Scalia. Justice Roberts, who is a brilliant jurist, I think, by anybody's estimation, asked 40 questions, raised 40 potential issues that the Caperton decision would raise by making recusal issues on appearance of bias a due process implication type of case. Of the 40 issues he raised, not one of them raised the issue of a potential chilling effect on free speech. And I think that the absence of that argument being made by somebody of Judge Roberts' ability and stature speaks for itself. And so that's where I think the opposition comes from. I would also argue that, you know, all of us, regardless of your judicial philosophy, regardless of your political view, have a stake in having the integrity of court rulings respected. And it seems to me that the party that has the predominant power at any given point in time has a greater stake in having court rulings respected and the law respected. This petition and this is something that serves everybody, regardless of what their beliefs may be on a partisan basis or an ideological basis or a judicial philosophy basis. This is something that is good for all of us because it enhances the respect for law.
John, has there been any indication that the Wisconsin Supreme Court will be considering this petition or making any decisions on this petition?
None that I've heard. Maybe Dale has got or Rick has got more information on that. My personal opinion is that I think the Supreme Court, because of the reputation that they have developed, should welcome this petition. They should look for an opportunity to rehabilitate the legacy that they've developed over the last few years. Their reputation, you got Supreme Court justices grabbing each other by the throat in their chambers, for goodness sakes. The reputation needs a little work, and this would be a good start. I would think they'd relish the opportunity. Now, I could be wrong about that.
Dale, have you, had any indication?
No, I have heard nothing. I think that the only thing I saw, and this was some time ago, was a spokesman for the court said that the court did not comment on pending petitions. So whether they grant a public hearing or not, which we've asked for, which we would welcome because it would allow other individuals who had an interest in this an opportunity to come forward and present their feelings and thoughts to the court, we would welcome that. But whether they will do that or not, I simply have no idea.
Dale Pacelle, a retired judge from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, is here with us today to talk about a group of former judges calling for stricter rules around campaign donations for judicial races. He's joined by John Perlich, another retired judge from La Crosse County, and Rick Kite, director of Viterbo's Institute for Ethics and Leadership. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on ethics and state government. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. In 2014, the Center for American Progress ranked Wisconsin toward the bottom of the list for the way the state handles real or perceived conflicts of interest posed by campaign contributions. And there have been more changes to the way campaign financing is regulated in the state, including the end of the state's Government Accountability Board. Many have voiced concerns about how this decision has impacted ethics in state elections. Joining us to talk about these issues are Dale Pacelle and John Perlich, retired judges from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, and Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University. In the first half of the program, we were talking about a petition that's been signed by more than 50 former judges, asking for stricter rules about when judges need to recuse themselves based on campaign contributions. And, I just want to return to talking about that petition for a moment and ask, Dale, is this petition really aimed at a certain level of the court system? Is it, we've been talked about the Supreme Court level and how that's become a very costly campaign to run. Is it aimed at the Supreme Court level, or is this, applicable to other levels?
On its face, it's applicable right down to municipal court judges, from the Supreme Court to municipal court judges. But I think that impact of any judicial campaign where large amounts of money are spent has an impact on how the public views the judicial system as a whole. So whether it's a circuit court judge race, an appellate court judge race, or a Supreme Court judge race, I think it's important that we restore the view of our court system as one of integrity where justice is not for sale. And so when we hear about large amounts of money, obviously that's at the places where they have the greatest influence, and that's at our state Supreme Court level. But the perception filters down to the rest of the judge positions, including trial judge positions, circuit court positions. And I think that the trend toward big money, the trend toward increasingly relying on partisan groups to fund campaigns is working its way down to the appellate court level and to the trial judge level as well. So I think it's important that we have a rule that is across the board for everybody.
Rick, do you think that this issue is different in different areas, I guess. Do you think that there's, a difference between, looking at this issue in La Crosse County versus Dane County or Milwaukee County?
Well, I think there is. I think we're very fortunate in western Wisconsin to have a great deal of trust. I think we have higher levels of trust in our representation at all levels of government. And a pretty good working relationship. We certainly find it in the, for example, when in the lawyer review cases where lawyers come up with complaints about misconduct for lawyers, we have a much lower incident in western Wisconsin than on the eastern side of the state. So I think government is cleaner here. And not just government, but I think we have, business is just done in a different way on this side of the state. Of course, that's easy for us to say. We live here, and so we're proud of this part of the state. But I think there's quite a bit of evidence for that. But as we look up at larger elections going over a larger area and statewide elections, there's a real concern about kind of maintaining integrity.
And John, in the first half of the show, we were talking about, whether or not the state Supreme Court will consider this petition and give it a public hearing. But John, are there ways that the public can weigh in on this issue and maybe voice their support or opposition for the rules and for the petition that you guys have signed?
Well, obviously, letters to the editor and things like that are beneficial. We would like to solicit the support of members of the Senate and the Assembly. We would like to solicit the support of various other organizations. And I think we're starting to do that now. So there will be ways for the public to voice their opinion. How exactly that's going to work, I'm not sure. Maybe Rick knows more about that than or Dale does. I haven't heard.
Dale, do you think it's important that people, voice their support or opposition to this?
Sure. We live in a democratic society. Courts are not deaf. I think that when newspapers editorialize for or against something, the court system hears and reads those things. When people write letters to the editor, when people voice their opinion to their legislators, I think that all of those things have a cumulative impact. As to what would work, I don't know. I mean, it's anecdotal stuff for me, but it's, I think that it's obvious to me that when people raise their voice, that people in government are gonna listen.
At the start of this half of the show, I mentioned, the end of the Government Accountability Board in 2015, and now the new state's Ethics Commission and Elections Commission. And Rick, I wonder what your thoughts are on these changes on the way our state government kind of handles looking at ethics and elections.
Well, I am an advocate for trying to, as much as possible, take partisan politics out of review of cases where there's alleged misconduct, because I think it protects the reputation of the government. And of course, there's always the concern about whether whether one party or the other can use ethics review, ethics investigations, as a tool for getting more power. And there's, of course, there's always that, there's, you know, temptations toward to manipulate the system in various ways. But insofar as possible, we should try to get independent investigations, independent review. And both parties should be interested in doing this. I think one of the problems we have is parties that are continually looking out for short-term power. And what we ought to be doing as citizens is insist what we want is long-term interests represented, and we want a clean government. And Wisconsin for many years had a reputation for one of the cleanest governments in the nation, right? We were a model. And I think that's been damaged in recent years.
Since the creation of the Ethics and Elections Commission, there has been one member of the Ethics Commission that has resigned. A former Oneida County judge, Robert Kenny, resigned in December, saying the agency was too private and too partisan. Dale, were you surprised by this resignation, and what are your thoughts on it as yourself a former judge?
I wasn't surprised. I agree with what he just said. And I think for your listeners' sake, they should know what we had before. In 2007, we created the Government Accountability Board, and it was an effort on the part of the legislature, following a scandal where leaders of both parties were actually, you know, found guilty of criminal offenses and imprisoned. What the legislature did on a bipartisan basis was create a government accountability board where we had six retired judges, all from positions that were nonpartisan positions where they'd been elected, who would be the government accountability board and would direct that agency. Following the trilogy of John Doe cases, in the Walker recall election, et cetera, there was a perception that that board or that agency had been politicized. But instead of trying to make it less partisan, the legislature has now enacted along party lines, strictly party lines, a new ethics commission and a new elections commission, where we have equal numbers of partisan appointees, three on each side, and it's patterned after the Federal Election Commission, which is notorious because it's of its inability to enforce anything because nobody ever has a majority. It's always 3-3. One person one time characterized the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, as the failure to enforce commission. And I think that that's where we're at. In fact, Judge Kenny, who was the Democratic appointee, I believe, to the new commission, I think that it's not surprising to me that he would be frustrated by the fact that it looks like that's what's going to happen, is that they're not going to be able to agree on things. And we hope that the people who are there recognize that even though they're appointed on a partisan basis, that they have an obligation to make sure that everything is run fairly and properly. But the old system that was enacted previously, at the time it was enacted, everybody was in favor of it. Senator Fitzgerald, DeVos, who's, are the party leaders from the Republican Party, Mark Gundrum, who's an appellate court judge, was a conservative legislator. They all spoke in favor of this. And it passed with a very huge bipartisan majority. The new one is passed by a strictly party lines, and I think it's unfortunate. I remain an optimist that perhaps we'll have people on that commission who are going to say, we want to have clean government in Wisconsin. We all have a stake in it. But I think it went from a system that could have been a model for the country to a step back. That's not to say that ultimately it might not work, but that's the fear, I think, and the criticism of it is that it's going to be a system of deadlocks.
Dale, as you pointed out, you know, the new Ethics and Elections Commission are made up of partisan appointees, whereas the old Government Accountability Board was a nonpartisan agency. And, you know, Rick, we started our conversation and you mentioned that, you know, everybody has their biases. And I wonder, you know, is it possible even in a nonpartisan agency to kind of get away from those biases?
Yes and no, right? We're all going to have a certain amount of biases. The question is the amount, the extent, really. How much bias, and in what direction? And when you have nonpartisan appointees, and for example, in appointees of retired judges, I think you get about as close as you can get to reducing bias in a way that you get pretty fair decisions. And the other thing is then to make it pretty transparent. So then what happens is the reasons for decisions by the Government Accountability Board become really important, because we know they're not making decisions just based on which side they're on. If you have partisan appointees, then we expect people on that board to make decisions based on which side they're on, and we don't listen to their reasons because that's irrelevant. But if you have nonpartisan appointees who have their own reputation at stake in making these judgment calls, right, then we really have to pay attention to what they say. And that's better for all of us.
Rick, you mentioned earlier that, you know, people's opinion of kind of the, you know, of their elected officials and kind of their reputations has, you know, been declining, and that people, you know, don't believe that they are as honest as they once were. How do you think that we kind of restore people's trust in our elected officials?
One of the things that I do quite a bit of is provide ethics training for various professions, anywhere, all the way from engineers to dietitians. And what these professions do is they've all developed code of ethics, and some professions have very detailed code of ethics. Some are not so detailed, but have a few general principles. But they're all very concerned about conflicts of interest. Every single code of ethics of every profession wants to reduce the influence of personal interests, right, over professional judgment. And they take this really seriously. And what we find is that many professions that really have taken this seriously, their reputation among the public for honesty and integrity has increased year by year. And I find it remarkable that, like, engineers and nurses and dietitians all have, I would say, much higher standards for eliminating conflict of interest than judges do. And judges take a very cavalier attitude towards this, right? Surveyors take a very serious attitude towards it. Why do we have a higher expectation of a surveyor avoiding conflict of interest than we do judges, right? I think that's a really important question. And frankly, I think it's a scandal that we don't hold judges to a higher standard than every other profession. And one of the reasons for that is that not only are oftentimes lives, public health and safety at stake in decisions that judges make, more than just about any profession, public confidence in the institution is necessary for them to do their job. Because the authority coming from judges is not just legal authority, it's a moral authority. And so judges themselves should take this very seriously.
We've been talking with Rick Kite, director of the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership at Viterbo University, Dale Passell and John Perlich, retired judges from the La Crosse County Circuit Court, about how rules for campaign donations for judicial, legislative, and other candidates are impacting state government. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.